Coming up on this episode of the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, Chris and I are joined by a tattoo artist and owner of the Area 51 Tattoo in Oregon and star of the reality show Epic Inc., Chris 51. We also chat Rebels, Celebration, Vintage Collecting, Tattoos, wow, all that and more. So let's get this party started right now.
Just got to the Sarlacc pit.
And the powerful Pleiades.
The almighty Sarlacc.
Binds the galaxy together.
All powerful Sarlacc.
Its energy surrounds us and binds us.
Welcome to the Sarlacc Pit, official podcast of GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com, the fans podcast. So grab your lightsabers and join your hosts, Matt Cranky and Chris Hoffice Planet, for this round of discussions.
Welcome, Star Wars fans, to the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, the podcast to help you digest everything in the Star Wars universe. The Sarlacc Pit is brought to you by GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com, and we thank the folks at Galactic Binder and Yodas News for their support of the podcast. This is episode 85 for April 6th, 2015. If you're new to the show, I'm your co-host, Matt, and let me welcome in your host and creator, Chris Smith from Memphis, Tennessee. What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. It's weather's starting to turn nice, so I'm excited to actually go outside and do something. So,
hey, I tell you what, I am super excited because it's April, and we're getting that much closer to Celebration. Not to rub it in or anything, Chris, but
yeah,
hey,
you guys suck.
Everybody's excited about that. Hey, we got a great show planned today, Chris. So we're talking, of course, Star Wars, tattoos, vintage collecting, and all the latest from the Star Wars universe. And to help us do that, I'm very excited to bring in our guest. He's a world-renowned tattooist. He's a writer, business owner. And last fall, A&E wrapped its first season of the television show Epic Inc., where amazing tattoo artists converge on the Area 51 shop in Springfield, Oregon. And joining from Springfield, Oregon, is the owner of the shop, Chris 51. Chris 51, thanks so much for coming on the Sarlacc Pit Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm honored.
So, Chris 51, I got to ask, you know, we had Josh Bodwell on back in January, and, man, we just went over a bunch of stuff, and we're going to get your take on some stuff going on in the news, but ever since we started the show, one of the things that we love to ask our guests is how they first got introduced to Star Wars, to the saga, man. What was your story? What's your story?
I still remember going to the theater for Empire Strikes Back and it blowing my mind, you know, when I was young, and nothing else mattered after that point. You know, I was into everything before then, but once Empire hit and I saw the Hoth and the Wampa and Tauntauns, like, it was over for me from that point, man.
Yeah. So I think I remember reading that you're a little bit old, younger than me and Chris. So you actually saw Empire when you were maybe 7, 6 or something like that?
I did. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. We saw it, me and Chris. We saw it when we saw Star Wars when we were 6, 7, whatever. I don't remember much of that, but I do remember Empire because I was about 10. And Chris, I know you remember that.
Yeah. Just,
that was the one right there that really started my fandom, even though I was around for the original. Empire is the one that really started it off. So, Chris 51. Now, like I said, you are the owner. Area 51 is a shop that you own. You've been tattooing. How long have you been tattooing?
Going close to 14 years now. Yeah. Now, Area 51 is the shop on the show Epic Inc., and it's a real shop, and it looks just like it does on TV when you walk in here in Springfield, Oregon.
Yeah, I gotta ask you about that too. I mean, you know, I've been into the tattoo shows over the last few years, like big time. I mean, I've been watching, like, you know, Miami Ink and some of the, even the, tattoo, shows, the, like, not the game shows, but the,
Ink Master.
You know, Ink Master and stuff like that. I've been really into it just because it's just crazy how the artistry that goes on in here. And I think one thing that drew me to your show was, right off the bat, it was just the shop. I mean, half the time I know Chris, you were doing this too. You're watching the show and you're so focused on what's going on in the background, you kind of forget what was going on like in the show, right? Because just because your shop is just filled with just, not just Star Wars, I mean, everything pop culture. And I just remember watching show to show, just picking out things. And of course there was a ton of Star Wars stuff. That's what I gravitated toward. But I mean, how long did it take you to get that shop up and looking like that?
You know, that's my personal collection, every single thing in that shop. And I've been collecting for, I don't know, 25, 30 years now. And, it's just inviting people into my nerdy collection pretty much. And I'm glad you say that, because I felt like when I watched the show that there wasn't shit in the shop, because there's way more than what was shown, because we didn't have legal permission and releases to use everything. So watch some of the shows, you'll just see Simpsons and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because those were the only two things we could get. And then about halfway through, we got Star Wars. And then, of course, we just overloaded everything with Star Wars, because that's the one we all really wanted, you know. And then after a while, you started sprinkling in, you know, some Aliens and Terminator and this and that here and there, because one by one, we started getting these legal releases to use this stuff. So I'm glad you say that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say that that's like the only reason I watched it. I mean, it was a great show. I mean, like I said, I love that the artistry that goes in there. And you guys always seem to like, the show was always fun, and you guys are such a tight-knit group. Some of the other shows I watched, there was like, it was all about the drama. And I think sometimes it kind of took away from just like, just looking at the art and watching you guys do your thing. So that was like, I don't know, kind of something different for your show was seeing that and seeing you guys, you got along so well. And all the artists and just how much fun you guys were having there. It's like, wow, someplace to get a tattoo, that'd be it. So that is all your collection? I mean, is there anything in your house, or is everything there at your shop?
No, actually, I'm very lucky. I have a wonderful wife who lets me put it up in the house too. So the house is the more highly collectible top end things, like all the vintage mint on card Star Wars figures and all the play sets and stuff like that in the glass cases and whatnot is at home. And then the shop isn't quite as much vintage stuff. You know, it's a little bit of everything kind of to please all the geeks that walk through the door.
Right, right. No, I totally get that. So do you have like Dobermans and constant, security around that shop when you're not there?
Yeah, I have like armed guards, you know, Cobra Commanders in the back.
Stormtroopers or something? Jeez.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, Josh, when we talked to him back in January there, he had no really, information at this point. Is there any chance of getting a season two?
We're trying so hard and it's kind of frustrating because we got such good reviews on it and we have such a huge loyal fan base. That it just makes you wonder how it hasn't happened yet. And my guess is maybe since it's airing internationally now, it's playing in France now and South America. I'm moving to Germany then and UK and I'm finishing Australia. So it's making the rounds, which not all the shows do, that's in itself is really cool. So even if we didn't get another season, you know, we appreciate that and we feel flattered just that that's happening. But my guess is maybe they're waiting to see how it does on all those other markets, to see how to aim it for a continuation.
Mm-hmm. And you filmed, I mean, how much filming? Was it 12 weeks? Was it, you know, 6 months? I mean, how long were they down there filming?
Oh, dude, it was like, I call it filming boot camp. It was the hardest thing and the most rewarding, fun thing I've ever done at the same time. Mm-hmm. We filmed for 3 straight months, 6 days a week, 16 hours a day.
Wow.
It was so difficult. It was literally boot camp and it wore us out. I mean, we all gained weight. We couldn't exercise. You know, we ate like crap.
Yeah.
It drained us mentally and physically over those 3 months. And it's a lot harder than one might think.
You know, I talked about earlier about how I got into a lot of the tattoo world through some of these shows. And I had talked to Josh about this. And you know, I don't know when this was, maybe 10 years ago, 15, 12, I don't know, but there has been a shift in and just everything about the tattoo industry, the artists themselves, the shops, the art. And I was a kid, and even, you know, maybe 10 years ago, you just always thought that it was something that was done in a biker shop down in the basement, and you had to be a biker to get a tattoo. And with all these shows now, and yours as well, you see this giant shift in, like, hey, tattoos are just, it's no big deal now, and everybody's getting them, and the artistry that goes into these tattoos is blowing me away. I mean, this is no more just Battleships and Anchors anymore. I mean, this is anything that you can think of, you can get put on, you know, your skin. It's just amazing. I mean, when did you see, Chris 51, when did you see, like, this shift in your industry? I mean, I know you've had to see it because you've been around, what, 14 years, you said, now or so, doing this?
Yeah, I've definitely seen it for sure.
I mean, when did you see the shift in it, like, wow, this is, you know, I could really do well doing this?
Honestly, you know, and you'll find mixed reviews from tattoo artists in the industry about this, but I credit TV for it. You know, once Miami Ink hit, okay, and that got big, it opened a lot of eyes to, you know, single housewives and maybe people that were a little too timid to go into shops, thinking it was one way, like you said, thinking it was like maybe a biker shop or something like that. And it really gave the public a different perspective on how it can be, even though those shows are full of drama and a lot of attitudes and stuff, which I don't agree with, but right, it still made it easier for the general public that's not so inclined to do it to take that chance to step in the door thinking it might be something like they saw on television. So I credit that, and I respect that, and I appreciate what those guys did to pave the way for us to get mm-hmm. to where we are today.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, like you said, that was one of the first ones with Miami Ink, and watching that. And those guys, you know, there were some good shows and some good artists there too. And I think your show, it just did like a 180. It's like, you can always have fun, and the shop was just so inviting. You come in, and especially for the geek culture and the culture that, you know, Chris, you and I, that we all enjoy, mm-hmm. you would be able to come in there and just get whatever you want. You know, I mean, watching the show, everything from, like you said, Alien to Turtles to Robot, you know, Cyborg, Presidents to, you know, it was just everything. It was everything. Yeah. So it was so cool to see that. And I hope you guys do get a second season. That'd be great. Chris.
Yes.
We got, like I said earlier, we got, Celebration coming up, and I'll get both of you guys' take on this. I mean, this is the main thing that's going on. There's really been no news as of late because I think everything's going to be heading towards Celebration. The first thing that I heard was we possibly could get a new trailer for The Force Awakens, which I've got to tell you guys, I mean, if that doesn't happen going to Star Wars Celebration, I will be severely disappointed. I think this has got to be the perfect opportunity to show a new trailer. You got J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy kicking off the show Thursday at 10 o'clock with their panel with special guests. And, you know, if they don't show this trailer and this poster that we're supposed to get, I'm going to be severely disappointed. Chris, what do you think? I mean, you don't even have to go to Celebration. I mean, there's going to be so much great stuff coming out of this.
Yeah.
You're going to be up to date on everything just almost as fast as we are.
Yeah, I mean,
they got to show this, right?
I'm still disappointed that I can't go, but I think they'd be a complete idiot not to show it. I mean, they'd have to know that if they don't show it, they're going to piss off a ton of people. I mean, you can't tell me that they're going to hold it back to show it, to premiere it with
Avengers.
The Avengers on May 1st. Come on, give me a break. I wouldn't be surprised if we get one trailer next weekend and then we get a completely different one on Avengers. I would not be surprised, but
odds are
I think it'll be the same one. But yeah, going and seeing it with Avengers would just be the chance to get to see it on a big screen. Because
right.
I know I'll go see Avengers probably two or three times at least.
Now, Chris 51, I know you're going to be going there. Like I said, I'll be severely disappointed. And they don't necessarily have to show like a full 2.5 minute trailer, but even just like a minute's worth of new scenes that we get to check out, I don't know. You got to give us something, right? I mean, would you be disappointed if we didn't see something from The Force Awakens?
Honestly, not really. I've been to so many Star Wars celebrations that just the whole atmosphere and aura of it all, I'm just like in geek heaven, man. Like, I don't even care, dude. I just like walking around with stormtroopers and, you know, Darth Vader's around me and buying the toys and talking and just geeking out with everybody. That, you know, of course I want to see it, but, it's not going to ruin my time if I don't. That's for sure. There's so much to do at a celebration if you've never been. There's just too much to do. Like, you can't have enough time there. You just wish it could go on for a whole week.
I think that's the thing that I'm also looking forward to is getting together with a lot of the podcasters and friends that I've made over the years and just hanging out and just with like-minded people that love Star Wars as much as I do. And like I said, this panel with JJ, I mean, it's going to be like I supposedly it's like being telecast to other countries. They've opened up three or four extra halls to it to be piped into. So, I mean, anybody that can't get into the main viewing area is going to be able to see this thing. So just that alone makes me think that we're in for something very special. And they also talked about possibly revealing the poster for The Force Awakens. And I don't know if either one of you know, did they say who the artist was for this yet, or do we know?
I haven't heard.
Okay. I know they were talking about, like, Drew Struzan coming back to do it, but I don't know if that was ever confirmed or if that was just a rumor. Of course, everybody would love to see that guy, but,
oh yeah.
That's another thing. That's another thing that they talked about was the Force Awakens, teaser poster. So, Chris 51, anything else, like, that you're looking forward to? You said you've been to a lot of celebrations. Anything else obviously you're going to be doing some work there too, right?
Yeah, I'm actually not tattooing at this one. I've tattooed at all of them. And when you tattoo them the whole time, you don't get to enjoy them as much because your head's down in someone's skin the whole time, you know? So, luckily with the success of the show, it has enabled me to go to this one more as I don't want to use the word celebrity, but more as just a geek, you know? And, and just hang out and I'm judging the tattoo competition there. So whoever's listening to this, please come enter your Star Wars tattoos because I can't wait to see them. A good buddy of mine, Shane Turgeon, is releasing his new book, Force in the Flesh, Volume 2. I'm sure you've seen the other one. It's a whole Star Wars tattoo book.
Right.
And I'll be signing my section of the book in his booth. And then just visiting all of my Star Wars artist friends, Brian Rood, Steve Anderson, who actually Steve Anderson created our Epic Inc. Show poster.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah, and he's a licensed Lucasfilm artist, so... I'll be hanging out in their booths, Brian Rood and Steve and those guys, and drawing with them and picking their brains and just having a good old time, man. I can't wait. And, of course, buying lots of toys.
Yeah, I was going to say, your poster definitely has the Star Wars feel to it. Really cool poster for you guys to show. And you talked about this. Well, Josh Bodwin, when he was on, I think he is tattooing, the last I remember him telling us, so... he's going to try to limit it just so he can enjoy, like you say, just going out and just geeking out or whatever. You were talking about this tattoo contest. What is that for? I'm a little confused. Is that for tattoo artists or just anybody?
No, that's for the public, the general public. It's a Star Wars tattoo contest. And
they bring in their
myself. I think they. Yeah. To your Star Wars tattoos, and you know, there's prizes and trophies and that sort of thing like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. They're going to have another surprise guest judge, and I think a rock and roll star is going to be up there too with me and stuff. So it should be a lot of fun.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that they were going to be drawn, but it's actually on. I got it now. I'm catching up to you guys. Here we go.
Yeah, you need a tattoo before you can enter.
It's not just entering tattoos that are done there. You know, there will be some. Probably a couple dozen tattoo artists there, including some of the Epic Ink cast will be tattooing there. But this is just for any person that wants to enter any Star Wars tattoo at all. So it should be fun.
Okay, cool. Definitely look for that. So yeah, you'll be hanging out around the tattoo pavilion, obviously, a little bit. And anything else there that you definitely have to see, any panels or anything like that, or are you just going to go and just kind of wing it?
I'm more of the exclusive toys that are released there, so I'll be standing in lines. And you know, I'll be trying to be that pretentious asshole that throws around the name Epic Inc. to butt to the front of the line, but I'm sure it's not going to work. You know,
yeah, like, hey.
I'll be standing in line just like everyone else, but you know, I'm going for all the exclusive toys from all the different companies.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. That'll be fun. Another thing that's going on as far as Star Wars in the news, there's been some rumors about Star Wars being digitally released, and Vudu was the one that was kind of leaked it, that we might get some of these movies, all six of them, as a digital release. Now, Chris, I don't know how psyched you are about this. I mean, I can just kind of burn them on to, I can take my Blu-rays and put them on my computer and download them to my phone. So I don't know exactly what the huge big deal is with this. I mean, I know there's a lot of extra features. I think all of them that I looked at, we've seen already. So is this anything that you're excited about, or is this?
No, I wouldn't even think twice of it, because like you said, I've already got all mine in my computer and I got them on my phone. Honestly, why would I even need it? I mean, it would be a nice, good, solid, clean, crisp file as opposed right. to something else, but still, I've got what I need. Yeah. And like you said, if there's nothing new on it, then what's the point?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you guys.
No, go ahead, Chris, what do you want? Go ahead.
Didn't I hear that they're doing 4, 5, and 6, though, when they redo them digitally? They're releasing the original versions without the added crap that they did back in the day. Didn't I hear? Is that true? Because then I'd buy them if that was the case.
Yeah, I think, you know what? And you're not alone on that, because there are a ton of people that are clamoring to get the original unaltered versions of 4, 5, and 6, whether it's, you know, Blu-ray or digital or whatever. And I think... I did hear some rumors about that happening, but I don't know anything for sure about that. I can't even remember what website was showing it. Maybe Jedi News.
Well, I looked it up, and I'm seeing here where it's somebody had, there's an ad in a Walmart that says Friday, April 10th, watch it on Vudu today. So it'll be available then. But I don't understand. You can already get the original versions of the original trilogy on DVD, so... I don't understand what the deal is. The quality's not that great.
Right.
On that version of the DVD, but, I mean, to have a high quality, high resolution cut of the original, then yeah, I'd be all for getting that.
That was just one thing that I remember when the Blu-rays were announced. I mean, a lot of people on forums were just so upset that they didn't include the unaltered versions of it, you know, and, you know, it didn't really bother me. And like I said, this digital release was not really anything that I've kind of seen I've already seen all the behind the, like you said, if there's something new, hey, cool, great. But like I said, I already have them, like you, Chris, I already have them on the computer. I have them on my phone. It's nothing really that's going to entice me. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, like you said, Friday I heard was some kind of a date that we could see something. So, we'll see if they're unaltered or if they're the new special edition. So I don't mind the special editions. Hey, new stuff. Chris, anything else going on, like in news or celebration you wanted to mention? Oh, wait, comics. That's right.
Yeah, comics.
Yeah, the comics have been going strong, man. Of course, Darth Vader is my favorite one of the bunch. But, hey, they're all got their pros as far as the story and the art. I mean, Chris, I'll start with Darth Vader. Okay. I'm only on the third issue.
Okay.
But,
spoiler alert. Anybody that don't want to hear, skip ahead.
Yeah. No, I won't really get into spoilers, but I'm just loving it. Vader is obviously my favorite character. Everybody who listens to the show knows this. So that's kind of been a sentimental favorite of mine. But of course, the Star Wars one is great. I mean, look who they got writing this. I mean, I've talked about this before. I mean, they brought these big guns out to do these things with, LaRocca doing some of the art and Jason Aaron and Mark Waid. With the Leia comic, great, great stuff. Chris, what's your thoughts on these books?
Well, so far I'm liking what I'm reading. Princess Leia started out kind of because I didn't know what direction they were going, the direction I thought they were going, like I'd mentioned before, I didn't like, but mm-hmm. they ended up flipping it and going a different direction, and I was like, okay, I like it. We're two issues in, and I like it. I like this young lady that she's running around with. I forget the name because there's so many names, new names trying to keep up with. Darth Vader is, I'm curious. I'm interested to see where it's going. It's kind of, the last couple of issues has kind of been up and down as far as excitement, but I like this girl. Was it Aphra?
Mm-hmm.
I like her. She seems interesting. I'm curious to see where they're going with that. Darth Vader just seems kind of like we're getting a different feel to Darth Vader in this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah, he started out in the first issue as this normal choke everybody in sight, but with him playing, you know, playing behind Palpatine's back, it's interesting to see this side of him for sure. And of course, the Star Wars one has been good so far. And you said you hadn't read Kanan. I got the first issue of that, and I read it. I really liked the first issue. Basically, the first issue just sets up the rest of the series. It's just him and his master in the battle, and then at the end, you get to Order 66. So from there, we get to go to see. I'm really, really interested. Actually, reading Kanan, I got really excited because I was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see what's going to happen. They're going to take him to see where he gets from Order 66 to where he is in Star Wars Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to see him? How is he going to hide? How is all this going to play? I just think that's going to be a fun, interesting series to read to go along with the TV series.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the Star Wars one, I mean, the last panel in the first issue is like a lightsaber battle. I won't tell you who it is, but it's crazy. I mean, and Darth Vader, he visits Tatooine. It's not really a big spoiler, but he goes back to Tatooine. I mean, it's just some really cool stuff. Chris 51, I know you're not, you mentioned you weren't reading these, but you gotta be a little impressed that Marvel is bringing out some of their big guns, you know, for this series. Like I talked about earlier, I mean, Jason Aaron and LaRocca and Wade and some of the other guys they got doing this. I mean, that's pretty impressive, huh?
Oh yeah, I definitely think it's cool. And honestly, I wish I had time to read them, but, yeah, I'm spending more time drawing them, that sort of thing, and tattooing them than I have to read them. But, yeah, it's definitely awesome. And I love anything new that's put out by Star Wars, honestly.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Since you're talking about new, Chris just mentioned the Kanan comic. Have you got a chance to even, check out any of the episodes of the Star Wars Rebel series?
I have checked that out. I love it.
Okay.
I have every single Rebels toy made so far hanging up in the shop.
Nice.
Of course, they're delegated to the bathroom now because I'm running out of wall space. So whoever goes to take in the bathroom gets a nice view of all the Star Wars Rebel figures.
I love it, man. I love it. You got all the figures already. Man, you're right ahead of me. Jeez. So, hey, that's great. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you've actually you're watching this show. I mean, talk about this first season, though. I mean, we went from the beginning where we met this crew to the very end of the last episode where we get Vader and we get Ahsoka back and you know, the Inquisitor is killed and Kanan and his breakthrough with the Force. I mean, some really crazy stuff. I mean, it went big this first season and, you know, it's a little different from the Clone Wars series when we followed this just one group and the progression that we got. I mean, look at this, some of the people and some of the actors they brought in for this series. Billy Dee was back. I mean, Frank Oz was back. James Earl Jones is back as Darth Vader. I mean, they really upped the game on this. I mean, Chris 51, I mean, your thoughts on just the whole series as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think they kind of had to because, you know, everything was really good before Rebels. You know, Attack of the Clones and stuff was really good quality, and I think they had to step it up a notch, and they really did. And I remember two celebrations ago hearing about it, and then last celebration hearing a lot about it and just not being able to wait for it. And now it's funny that coming to Celebration in and then the season is where it's at, and you know, hearing everyone's reviews and responses from it, and everything I hear is positive, and everyone seems to be loving it. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it keeps the buzz going, you know. It keeps us all in just Star Wars fever, and it's very smart on their part to pay the big bucks to get these actors back and to keep it going with such quality leading up to, you know, the release of Episode 7. So I think they're doing it smart.
Yeah, I know. I'm right there with you. I mean, like you said, bringing in these guys, these big guns to get this series going. I mean, I was stoked when I heard that James Earl Jones was coming back. And then, like I said, Frank Oz and Billy Dee. I mean, these are guys from the original trilogy coming back. So I think they, obviously that was like you said, it was like a game plan to really get everybody back on track, and the people who maybe weren't so big on the Clone Wars, hey, I mean, we got OT stuff going on here. So they were really trying to get everybody back in this big push towards December and The Force Awakens. So, yeah, they really killed it on that series. And we actually get to see the first episode of Season 2 at Celebration. So that's going to be cool to be able to check that out and see where they go, see where they left off. Hopefully we'll get to see Vader and Ahsoka and all that back again. So good stuff coming for Rebels, yeah. So anything else, Chris, before we jump into the topic today?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
All right, let's jump it right in.
Hello there. You're listening to the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, an elegant podcast for a more civilized age. You can go about your business. Move along. Move along.
So like I talked about earlier, Chris 51, your shot, man, just a shrine, man. I just love it. And this is going to go good with what we're talking about today. Chris, you wanted to talk about some vintage vehicles and play sets. And of course, we're going to bring us back and hopefully bring you guys back listening back to your younger days, like we are with ourselves here. Let's start off, Chris. Let's just start off with Star Wars and some of the vehicles, and I'll start off myself with obviously the TIE Fighter and Darth Vader's TIE Fighter and the X-Wing Fighter were my go-to vehicles that, and I remember getting these for Christmas. I remember the exploding TIEs and you know, the wings would fall off, and I vividly remember this as a kid, opening those up, and those were the three big, and the Millennium Falcon. I still have it. This crazy. I still have the original Millennium Falcon that I got. Still up in them. It's a little worse for wear now, but hey, I played with these damn things. So not all the parts are still there. Some of the landing gear is not as good as it was. But Chris, let's start with you. You wanted to start off with the land speeder and kind of work your way down, or how did you want to do it?
Well, I was just going to say I'll do it like kind of like I did the figures. Off with Star Wars and what vehicles were released. I'm going to run through the list quickly, and then we can go back and discuss them.
Okay.
You had the land speeder, then you had the sonic controlled land speeder, and then Millennium Falcon. You had the Imperial Troop Transporter, the Sandcrawler, which was remote controlled, which was really, for the time, it was awesome, but by today's standards, it was crap.
Right.
TIE Fighter, Darth Vader's TIE Fighter, and then the X-Wing. As a kid, I ended up with all of these except for the sonic controlled land speeder. I didn't really see the point. I had the land speeder, but at any rate. For me, like you said, I loved every bit of, I played with every single thing on this list. I played with and played with and played with. Of course, my two favorites was the Millennium Falcon. And, as far as a vehicle was the Millennium Falcon. Actually, the Millennium Falcon was more like a vehicle and a play set in together because you could,
right.
When you set it down, you had the inside to play with and everything. Of course, like you said, I love the TIE Fighter and the X-Wing, and I love the fact that those wings exploded off. That was so cool as a kid. You do exactly what the commercial said. I know you remember the commercial. You'd be running around in the yard and you flip those buttons and the wings would come off. And of course, the Imperial Troop Transporter. That was like one of my favorites because of the electronics in it. It actually had sounds and lines from the movie. You could actually hear 3PO talk, Stormtroopers talk. They had like the blaster shots, R2-D2 beeping and stuff like that. That was just such a cool thing for me. And for 1978, for it to really sound that good, that was really good. So, yeah, I want to pass it on to Chris 51 here, and what's his take on this group of vehicles that we got there?
And do you still have any of these, or do you have them all?
Oh, man, I have every single one, and not only do I have every one, they're the originals from when I was a kid as well. Thank God my mom, you know, I think my mom paid so much for these at the time, and, you know, we were a low-income family. And I think she spent every penny she had because she knew how much I loved Star Wars. And so she would never let me sell them. You know, we'd have garage sales, and she'd let me sell Hot Wheels and G.I. Joes. But she's like, no, those damn Star Wars I paid too much for. You're keeping those. You give them to your kids. And you know what? She was right, but I can't give them to my kids because I can't part with them. Man. I love them too much.
I could have that, and that is smart. I mean, she was actually thinking like Lucas was back in the day, right? Like, hey, I'm gonna get these toys because, you know, I think this is gonna go huge. So she was actually thinking thinking way ahead. And I've heard of like parents doing that like a few times where like this one person I know, like their mom bought two of everything. Like she bought them an action figure, she bought another one and put it away. I mean, holy crap. I mean, that's just thinking way far ahead. So Chris 51, you actually have all of these first Star Wars vehicles. Which one's your favorite?
Yeah, that's like a parent Jedi, man, putting one away like that. That's a special package right there. my favorite, of course, is the Falcon. I mean, I still have my original one that's all played with condition, and I got a couple backup ones that are a little better condition, you know. But like you said, that was a playset. You could smuggle guys in there and it could fly at the same time. It was just awesome, man. I loved it. And I love the land speeder too. And in fact, I had two land speeders because I had one that I used all my model paint on and made it all rusty looking and damaged before they came out like that, you know? And then I had my one that I kept in good shape. So I was thinking ahead. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have the original boxes for these two?
I have the box for my X-Wing and, the land speeder, but the other boxes I subsequently have purchased them over the years, you know.
Okay. Do you have any idea of like what some of these are as far as like the market value on these right now?
They're pretty high.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
You do? Okay.
In fact, you know, I personally think, the boxes, a shaped box is to me is just as collectible as the toy itself because those are even harder to find, you know?
Right.
Yes.
And I've gotten to the point now where, I've been buying having custom made the hard acrylic cases just for my boxes because it's also like artwork. I love displaying the boxes and protecting them, you know, and people love seeing those old boxes with the little kid with the 70s bowl haircut, you know, with the TIE fighter in his wing, you know, in his hands and stuff. I mean, that's cool looking, dude. So, you know, to me, it's like people buy art. Well, I buy boxes and I display them up, and I think they look even cooler, you know?
Yeah. You know, I kept my toys up till I was like 23, 24, then I sold everything off, and not a day goes by that I don't regret not having. I got a few things from when I was a kid, but I just, looking back on it, I just hated that I did it. But like now, when I go and I search on eBay looking for some of the older stuff, like example, I picked up in the box land speeder, complete with the box. The only thing missing is it didn't have the sticker sheet for the one sticker that it needs. So now I got to find that. But I've noticed, as you said, if it's complete and out of the box with the box, it depends on how good the box is. To me, I don't want to buy one that's complete in the box and sealed for myself because I want to be able to open it and look at it or display it outside of the box. And if I pay that kind of money to get it sealed, I'm not opening it. I'm going to put that thing in a case, like you said. And the boxes, to me, are as important, if not more important, than the actual toy in a lot of cases. Because, like you said, I love the artwork on the way they did them and everything, like with the land speeder. I got it sitting up here right beside me so I can look at it every day.
So of these eight Star Wars vehicles, which one do you think is going to draw the most as far as collector value?
Probably the Sandcrawler because it's harder to get. If you can get one in working condition, it's going to be outrageous, basically.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Now you got
hard to find too.
The what is?
The Sandcrawler boxes are pretty darn hard to find too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the Imperial Troop Transport is another one if it works, but it's kind of difficult to find one in a Star Wars box. A lot of times when I'm looking for it, all I can find is the Empire box. But, it's any of these older ones are hard to find. The land speeder is not that hard to find and it's very inexpensive to get a hold of, but everything else is going to just be like even the X-Wing and the TIE Fighter. If you can find one with a box, it's going to be over 100 easily. Depending on the condition, and some even higher than that. And you got some places, I'm not going to mention the name, but there are a couple of websites that sell some of these things, and I think they just really, really mark it up way too much. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's...
It seems like... Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, if it's graded, that's one thing.
Oh, right.
People will pay more for a graded item. But in turn, with the graded items going so much higher, it brings all of the other stuff up even higher. And mm-hmm. makes it more difficult for people like me, looking back trying to pick up pieces. It's a pain, and it mm-hmm. can be very expensive. So anything vintage Kenner is going to be high dollar, period.
And it seems like the common trend, at least with Star Wars figures and playsets, is almost like the less popular the vehicle was, the more sought after it is. I mean, yes. I guess because they made so many TIE fighters, and because that was the main thing, and X-Wings, I mean, right. tons of those. And even with the figures, it's kind of like that. So you also have listed five playsets. Chris, yes. you want to mention those Star Wars playsets?
Yeah, for Star Wars, we had five playsets. We had the Cantina Adventure playset, which was a series exclusive, and also came with the action figures Greedo, Walrus Man, Hammerhead, and a Blue Snaggletooth, which wasn't in the regular line. So that was the only way you could get that figure. And then you had a regular creature Cantina playset, the Death Star Space Station, the Droid Factory, and then Land of the Jawas. The only thing on here, I had the Creature Cantina playset and the Death Star Space Station. I didn't get the exclusive Cantina set, but I love that little... I like the regular Creature Cantina playset. It wasn't just cardboard. The one that came from Sears was just basically cardboard with action figures. The other one had plastic. It had a door. It had... the bar, it had a table that Han and Greedo could stand at, and it had little action levers, and then, of course, the Death Star. That Death Star was just, to me, was the greatest toy that they ever made for me as far as a play set. That thing just,
oh, yeah.
It had everything on it. It was perfect. I wish they would remake one in that similar mold now and put it out, but, of course, Hasbro's not going to do that.
Yeah. Chris 51, you got any of these play sets?
Man, you know, I gotta say first, you took the words right out of my mouth, Chris. The Death, that is my holy grail, is, the Death Star playset. And it's funny because it's like the only one I don't have. Wow. My buddy had it growing up, and it was the coolest thing, especially the trash compartment with the little foam cubes mm-hmm. in it and stuff. It was so cool. And, you know, I've just been holding off because I've always wanted to find one in really good shape and with the box and everything. And you either find one with the box, but, the trash compartment's missing all its foam pieces or vice versa. So that's my one, holy grail I've been holding out for, and I just love it. But, yeah, I have most of them. I don't have the Sears exclusive, but I got a few of the Blue Snaggletooth, which is one of my favorite figures of all time. And I mean, that alone, just a loose Blue Snaggletooth in decent shape, you can catch $100 easy just for the figure. Ooh. No packets, nothing, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they're awesome, but that Death Star is so cool. It's the coolest thing ever.
Have you seen any where you've been tempted and they're just too much, or is it just that rare that you just haven't found any?
No, yeah, they are so expensive. It's probably the most expensive boxed complete toy for the whole Star Wars line.
Yes.
It's right up there, if not, you know. And I've been tempted a lot, but I mean, I've seen them up around $500 to $700 before for really good shape, and I just haven't been able to spend that much money on it, you know. So I'm holding out for a good deal and a good playset, you know. But yeah. I got most of the other ones, you know. That the did you mention the Star Destroyer playset?
Not yet.
No, okay. Okay, yeah, that one was pretty cool. But yeah, I could talk about this all day, you guys. I mean, this is my jam right here, dude.
Oh, I got the whole list here. I guess.
Hey,
speaking about the Death Star, one good thing about that is you can actually search on eBay. You can actually pick that up in pieces and actually put it together, because in searching, I found all kinds of, somebody will have just the tower and maybe one level. Somebody else will have another level. And you can actually put it together in decent shape just to have it loose. But the trash compactor foam is super hard to find. The rope is extremely hard to find. And like, yeah. and plus it's so fragile. That's another reason why it fetches so much money. If you can find one in good shape, just loose. It's because it is so fragile. I mean, I tore mine up just playing with it, just normal play. And I wasn't one that was rough on my toys. So, and that's one of the things too that I've been, searching for. That's one of my most important pieces is to get another one of those myself.
Chris 51, you were talking about the Star Destroyer. Let's jump into Empire Strikes Back if you want, Chris. And we got and this is the one where I really, for Christmases around this time, this is where I was getting a lot of stuff. I mean, the first time, not so much, but when Empire came out and these toys came out, the tree was full. I mean, I did have, let's talk about AT-AT, the AT-ST, the Rebel Transport, Slave One, the Snow Speeder, and the Twin Pod Cloud Car. And, of course, I had the Cloud Car, I had the Snow Speeder, I had the Slave One, and I had the AT-ST. So, of course, the Snow Speeder was my favorite. I mean, I think it also came with the tow cable was actually a string, right, Chris?
Yes, it was. It had a little plastic arrow with the string. It was cool. That thing was cool.
Yeah. And, of course, the Twin Pod Cloud Car. I mean, it was an odd vehicle and not, like, the coolest looking thing, but I got that as well. And then the Ultimate, of course, the Slave One. I love that thing. And it had like, it was kind of like the Millennium Falcon. I mean, it had the door would come down and you could kind of, it wasn't as big, obviously, but you can do some things in there, put some stuff in there or whatever. So, let's talk about these, Chris. You had all these as well?
I ended up with all of these. I didn't get the AT-AT until I was like 16, 17. I got that from a kid down the street who's had it, and I was like, yes, I gotta have that, because my parents just wasn't gonna spend that kind of money for a toy. And I mean, but yeah, everything else I had, I remember the Slave One was one that I'd saved up my own money and got, so that was pretty special to me, that one. And then the Imperial Attack Base, which we'll get to in a few minutes, playset. That was the first two things that I actually saved my allowance up every week until I could get those. And like you said, the Slave One was really cool. It didn't have as much room, like you said, but you could move the seat in position. You could flip it down and put the figure in there and then flip it back up like he's flying.
Oh, right.
And you had the little Han and Carbonite that was hollow that you could stick in there under the ramp. And the Snow Speeder was just such a cool vehicle. And I actually liked I had the Rebel Transport. I thought that was a cool thing, even though it was kind of weird. It's kind of odd that they even made that, but. Yeah. They made that more as a carry case, because that's how they ended up making it, having the handle, and you can actually load it up with like 50 figures and carry them that way. So they kind of designed that as a toy collector case in an oddball way. And of course, I did have the Twin Pod Cloud Car, even though that was the absolute lamest vehicle they ever made. Because, I mean, seriously, it didn't do anything. You had the landing gear, you popped it open, you could put two figures in there, and that was it. It didn't shoot nothing. It didn't make any sound. Absolutely nothing. But as a kid, I had to have it. So, but Chris 51, talk about some of these vehicles here.
Oh man, I love this line too. And, you know, my brother got the AT-AT and I was always jealous. But I always ended up playing with it. And the cool thing is it would double as, it would scare the shit out of the family dog, you know, which was really cool. So yeah, that was awesome. And, just recreating the battle scenes with that and the Snow Speeder and the harpoon and stuff. I remember tying longer strings to my harpoon just so I could wrap it around the legs, you know, when I flew it and stuff. That was back when you had to use your imagination, man. And I just loved it. And I also loved, all the mini rig vehicles too that you didn't see in the movies. And you're like, where the hell was this? I didn't see this in the movie, you know? The little one with like the little rollers that Snowtrooper fit in. It was like a little pavement steamroller on stilt. Like, and then the one with the tank tracks and the little dome, glass dome that the Hawk soldier fit in. But I kind of like that you didn't see them in the shows, because you could use them for whatever you wanted, whatever your imagination could conjure up, you know, and that was kind of the cool part of it. So, I loved them all, man. And I still have most all of those as well.
You know, I always thought it was strange because the AT-ST, they brought that out first. And it was only an Empire for one shot of it wobbling across on the Hoth, and then we actually didn't get to see it in any detail or action until Return of the Jedi. So I always thought that was really kind of odd as a kid that they brought that out and not the AT-AT first, because the AT-AT came out like in 81, I think it was, before that one came out.
And yeah. You know, the AT-AT's built so well, dude. I mean, I stole my brother's when he didn't care about it anymore, and I still have it, and I let my kids play with it. It is so rugged and built so well, man. I love it.
Yep.
And still I love got... when they reissued it too and made the bigger one.
Oh.
Which, oh God, it's so awesome. I played with that with my kids. It was a good excuse.
And see, Matt, you don't have the new big AT-AT, do you?
No. Uh-uh.
Yes, I finally got that myself. That and of course the big Millennium Falcon. Had to have those. And I got
awesome.
Both of them like sitting together with their Kenner counterparts. So
I'm kind of just waiting to get some space. Like Chris 51, I kind of feel what you, not necessarily what you're going through, but I know what you're talking about, like with the house, and you kind of I have like one little wall that I get to put stuff on in the house and everything else is in the attic.
I know what you're doing. You're waiting for some kids to go off to college.
Well, I did. Actually, one just left just like 5 weeks ago. Not the college. He's in boot camp right now. So, I'm still debating whether I'm going to use that room as I'd always plan on that being my office and getting to display just everything. And I got so much stuff in the attic. I mean, I got a full size Darth Vader 501st costume that I've been waiting to put on a mannequin and put up. I mean, there's just so many things. And, you know, the house is, you know, that's mama's thing. And she doesn't like to see a lot of Star Wars crap all over the wall. Although she likes it, you know what I'm saying? But it's just not like the decor.
You don't want it spread all throughout the house.
Yeah, I mean, I got it sprinkled around here, man, especially in my theater room. It's got some things. But yeah, there's so much stuff that I want to put out. And I, you know, as far as the playsets, I mean, talk about these playsets. Cloud City playset, Dagobah playset, Darth Vader Star Destroyer, which I always wanted but never got.
Yeah, me neither.
Hoth-Ice Planet playset, Imperial Attack Base, and the Rebel Command Center. It was a Sears thing. I think what it was, my parents were, you know, they weren't rich or anything, so I was lucky just to get the vehicles and the figures.
Mm-hmm.
So the playsets were always kind of out of the realm, and I was happy with just the vehicles and the figures, but. Chris, talk about some of these playsets. Yeah, do you have any of these?
Well, I had the Dagobah playset, the Hoth Ice Planet playset, and the Imperial Attack Base. And then later on, I ended up, as a teenager, I got the Turret Probot playset from somebody. But the Cloud City playset was a Sears exclusive, and it came with Han Solo and Bespin outfit, Ugnog, Dengar, and Lobot. And that was just another cheap piece of plastic. I mean, just cardboard back and floor, and that was it. And, of course, the Dagobah playset was really cool. It had all the features. It had some great force effects to it that they had on there. I had a friend down the street that had the Star Destroyer playset, so I got to play with that a little bit. The Hoth Ice Planet playset was really cool because that came out before the AT-AT, and it had the cardboard backing with the AT-AT. So as a kid, I had the AT-AT before I had the AT-AT. And I always call it the AT-AT instead of the AT-AT. Imperial Attack Base was the other one that I had to, save up, that I saved my own money to get, and I love that thing. I played with that thing because it had so many great features. The Rebel Command Center was another Sears thing with the AT-AT Commander, Luke, Hoth, and R2 Sensor Scope. I never had that because I already had the figures, so what did I need that for? Mm-hmm. And to me, the Turret and Probot playset was kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it had a cool turret, and then it had the Probot, but it was just one little small piece of plastic with those two sitting on it. So, to me, I thought that was kind of lame, so I never did get it. But how about you, Chris?
My favorite, too, was the Hoth playset, man, with the collapsible bridge and the gun. Oh, my God, that was so cool. That's the one I played with more than anything. took it outside all the time, and I still have it with the pieces, and it's still... in the same shape, man. They made those things well back then.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, they did. That was cool.
I love that. I spent more hours playing with that than anything else. You know what's funny is Darth Vader Star Destroyer, it was one of those toys that escaped me. I didn't even know they made it all those years. And I don't know how, looking on the back of all the cards, I missed it every time or something. But until about like 10 years ago, I was like, what the hell is this? I never knew it existed. So I bought one mint in box, and I actually opened the box and put it together and stuff, and it is so cool. I love it.
I always thought it was weird, but it had a lot of great features to it. Because, like I said,
I think I liked it a lot because, you know, it shows, it's kind of the scene where you get to meet the bounty hunters for mm-hmm. the first time.
And it had his little meditation chamber.
Yeah, I remember Bosca's slimy toes kind of curling over the edge of it, you know, and so I think just that scene was so epic, excuse the pun, but it was, that, yes. You know, you try and recreate that on that ship and stuff, and that's why I think it holds a special place for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you have, did you get any of these when you were young, or have all these been procured over just your collecting era?
I got about half of these when I was young. I'd save my paper out money and, you know, everything I could. And my brother would get half and I'd get half. And I have, like I said, I have since stolen all his that he doesn't care about anymore. So, I ended up with a lot of them. I had about 2/3 of them growing up and I wasn't spoiled by any means. I worked hard for these things.
Yeah.
And mowing lawns and doing all that kind of stuff, picking strawberries out in the fields. I mean, I would do whatever I could to get Star Wars stuff, you know. So, and I was glad I loved it so much that it taught me the value of work ethic to get what you want, you know, and that you could have these. You didn't have to be rich and stuff if you just worked your ass off for it. So, right. I don't know. Star Wars just has so many deep rooted meanings to me in all walks of life when it comes to that.
Yeah. Let's finish out the OT with Return of the Jedi here, and we got some more. V-Wing Fighter, Imperial Shuttle, Speeder Bike, the TIE Fighter Battle Damage, the TIE Interceptor, X-Wing Fighter Battle Damage, and the Y-Wing Fighter. And for me, it was all about the Speeder Bike, the Imperial Shuttle, and the Y-Wing. Those are the three that I remember getting for Christmas and birthdays or whatever. Those are the big ones. And for whatever reason, I just love the Imperial Shuttle. It's always been a design that I was drawn to. And one of my favorite Imperial ships and favorite ships of the whole saga has been the Imperial Shuttle. I just love the way that thing looks. So, those are the three I had. Chris, what did you have?
For me, all I had on this list was, the speeder bike. The Imperial Shuttle was too expensive, so I didn't even bother to ask. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I didn't get the X-Wing or TIE Fighter Battle Damage because I already had the regulars. I picked up the Y-Wings a few years later when I was, like, 18. I picked them up at a local, like, Toys R Us. It wasn't Toys R Us. It was, like, Children's Palace or something. They had them clearanced out. I picked up, like, 3 of them for $2 each, still in the box. Mm-hmm. So I was like, cool, got me some Y-Wings. But the B-Wing, I never did get. Because I was getting older, so I had so many of the other stuff that I still played with, so I didn't really get as far as vehicles. The speeder bike was really the only thing I got that I played with as a teenager. Now, the play sets were different.
Now, the speeder bike, wasn't that also an exploding, you hit a button and it kind of, the front kind of broke apart?
Yeah, now, if anybody got the modern version of the one that they made in the 90s, it was the exact same thing. Exact mold as the Kenner mold. Exact same thing. It was a little bit different painted. So, Chris, how about you on these vehicles?
You know, dude, I think I can echo exactly every word you just said. I didn't get the new ones, the battle damage, because I had the old ones. My parents wouldn't spring for those. Yeah. You know, you already got the X-Wing. What do you need that for? You know, and I think all I really got new was the speeder bike, and that's what I cared about most, you know. And I eventually picked up the other ones later as I grew older. But same thing, I had all the ones that I played with from Empire, and I liked those the best. And I had more desire at that point to get more figures to play on those play sets than to get the new ships, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it only had there was only 3 play sets, Chris?
Actually 4 if you want to. You had the Ewok Village playset, the Jabba the Hutt playset, and then you had 2 versions of the Jabba's Dungeon playset, which were both series exclusive. One had Clay 2 Skip Guard outfit, 88, and Nikto. The other one had Barada, EB-99, and Amano Man. I actually picked up the first Jabba's Dungeon back a few months ago from a friend of mine. He picked it up in California, and so I got Got the playset. The box is in bad shape, but I got the playset with all the figures still sealed, so that's kind of neat. I wanted the figures more than anything out of that, yeah. But I had the Ewok Village. Love that thing. It was great features to it. Jabba the Hutt playset was kind of, as far as play features, was kind of lame, but it was so cool to have Jabba sitting on his throne. That was the coolest part, the little dungeon part where you had to move him off to open up the dungeon. I thought was a little odd, but I just used him as him sitting there with all the, have all the people around him, all the guards and stuff. And, of course, the Ewok Village. I love that thing. It had all the features from the movie built into that playset.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, you had like this crane, how do you want to say it? Like a crate that you can raise somebody up in. You had the net underneath that you could scoop up people in, and a little spigot where you can hook Han to and roast him. So that was really cool the way they had that. Did you have any of those playsets, Matt?
No, I did not. I did not. Like I said, it was rough with the playsets. And like you said, with the parents, you know, like, same thing. I was like, well, you already have an X-Wing. Why do you need another one? You know, you already have a TIE fighter. What do you need another for? They didn't understand, even though they were big fans of the...
Yeah, they didn't understand.
Of Star Wars. I mean, they just didn't really understand. Like, I'm not going to get you the same thing again. I'll get you something different. I think that's why I got the shuttle and the speeder bike and the Y-Wing was because of that. So, I mean, yeah. Chris 51, I mean, these playsets got to be hard to find now, right?
Yeah, Ewok Village is probably one of the easiest to find and one of the cheapest, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. You can find those. I still find those at garage sales and flea markets once in a while, honestly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Some of those others are hard to find, but man, I'm with Chris, dude. I think, did we just become best friends?
Maybe. I guess so. It sounds like it, doesn't it? Now, I tell you, if you want to look at finding those now, like the B-Wing's kind of hard. The two battle damaged ones are hard to find, and they're pretty expensive because they were later in the line, so they weren't that popular. The Imperial Shuttle is ridiculous to find. Any version, the modern version, the old version, it's ridiculous because I've looked myself. The TIE Interceptor is pretty hard to find because like they were all in the last. The Y-Wing might be probably out of those would be the easiest of the big vehicles. Speeder bike you can find all day long because they made tons and tons. Hell, I had three of those. I mean, I love that speeder bike. That was just the coolest thing. But you want to touch on the last few vehicles right quick, Matt?
Talk about the Power of the Force one?
Yeah, and the Power of the Force line, they only released two new vehicles. We got the Ewok Battle Wagon and then a Tatooine Skiff. We didn't get any playsets. And then when the Droids cartoon, they released the A-Wing Fighter, the something called an ATL Interceptor, which was from the cartoon, and the Side Gunner, which was from the cartoon, and no playsets. And, of course, I didn't have any. By this time, I was done.
Yeah.
Power of the Force. I mean, you know, we were 16 at the time, so I was kind of like, yeah, I picked up a few figures here to collect, but I just stopped buying because I was 16, so. But yeah, I didn't throw away anything.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everything I got was always from my parents, so at that age, you know, we just kind of, it was kind of on the back burner at that point, so I didn't get any of that, but, I don't know, Chris 51, you got any of those?
You know, I don't have as many of those either because, yeah, you get older, and then, like, for me, Motley Crue happened, you know?
Yeah.
Motley Crue and Rat and all that started happening for me, and then skateboarding and stuff. So, yeah, it's like the Power of the Force ones, I love them, and I don't have many of them, and it's something that I actively still try and get because of that reason, you know?
Yeah, they're hard to find.
I can tell you one we forgot, though, that I absolutely love is the Star Wars Droid Factory. I don't know if either of you guys had that one, but it had all the little droid parts and like it came with like a half an R2-D2 that you could kind of assemble and it had a little crane. Do you remember that?
I never got it. I remember it. I actually mentioned it, but I didn't say anything on it because I didn't have it. Yeah. And it had the droid parts and the Jabba's, dungeon playset was the exact same thing, just painted different with different action. It came with action figures. The Jabba's dungeon didn't come with the droid parts like the droid factory did. But,
yeah, it's weird how they did that. It was the exact same thing, but it was a different size box. I know, and I found out the hard way because I ordered, I spent $50 a pop on two acrylic hard cases for both the droid factory and the Jabba one.
Oh, no.
And, here it's the same exact toy with the same things, but in different size boxes. So
let me guess, you bought the acrylic too small? for one of them?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Jeez. So of all these vehicles and playsets, Chris 51, I mean, is there I guess the holy grail for you is still going to be Death Star?
Yeah, I definitely, the top three that stand out for me is the Death Star for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I would say Empire is, the Hoth playset with the ice bridge and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then, Return of the Jedi is definitely, Shuttle Tiberium, man. That's one I don't have, and it's just so expensive. I have never yet got it. Mm-hmm. But, those three, I think, are definitely the holy grails for each film.
Okay. For you too. So maybe at Celebration you might pick one of those. Probably way too expensive though, right? I mean, that's where they hike the prices up, right?
Definitely where they hike the prices up. Are these Gentle Giant released? I don't know if you guys collect these, but the jumbo figures that are the exact replica remakes of the original figures. Do you guys collect those?
No, I don't have the room for them, but I know I've seen them.
Some, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're amazing. They're like digitally taken off of the original molds, and they're just like 12 to 14 inch figures in the same packaging, and they're so addictive to have a big handheld toy, you know, bigger than a Barbie doll that is the exact replica of the original. But they're, you know, they're like $100 a pop. They're crazy expensive.
And actually, Gentle Giant, speaking of that, they announced today that they had two new exclusives for the show next weekend. One is the jumbo figure. It's the R2 C-3PO, the droid cartoon C-3PO version of the jumbo figure, and then the mini bust of General McQuarrie. So Ralph McQuarrie when he was dressed as a Hoth trooper.
Yeah. Right.
I just got totally aroused. I've been waiting to hear the Gentle Giant exclusives for weeks now. I've been checking every day, and I hadn't seen that yet today. So, thank you for that.
The McQuarrie is $120, and the 3PO is $100. It didn't show the packaging. It just showed 3PO standing there with the coin, and then, of course, one of the original figures standing beside him, but it didn't show the packaging, which is
awesome. Can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I was like, that kind of got me excited seeing that.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Chris, anything on your list of that got to have as far as this stuff?
For me, my two important things that I'm looking to get again is, of course, the Death Star space station and the Imperial troop transport. And I want the troop transport, and I'm willing to pick it up even if it doesn't work. But I really would like to find one that works as well. And that's going to be hard to do because it just doesn't last. Because that was one of the most fun things to me was the sound effects to that. And I would love to get an Imperial shuttle. I was actually looking for one of those, but like you said, those are expensive. And the Slave One, I'd love to be able to pick up a Slave One again.
Yeah, definitely. Chris 51, you were talking about, some of your exclusives that you're really, that's kind of one of your things as far as Celebration. You wanted to mention any of the exclusives that you're looking to get?
Well, Gentle Giant, the jumbo figures are usually my number one. And, I always hang out. I like going by the Funko booth and seeing what, pop figures they have and other things like that. I'm a sucker for exclusives. I am literally that guy that they market it to where they hike up the price, they change one color or something. And they make a shiny new package, and they get the suckers like me to come get every single one of them. Well, I'm that guy, dude. So I've been saving up, and I'll be standing in all those lines.
Nice. I'm going to try to cut in line with you one of these times.
Yeah, I just put the C-3PO link here in the Skype that you can go and pre-order it.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, there you go.
I think you could pre-order
it to pick up. I got no shame in my game. I should like write on my t-shirt, I will trade tattoos to cut in line or something, man.
That's a good idea. Yeah. That is a great idea, man. That is a great idea.
It is. I need to do that.
Plenty of people to do that.
Yeah.
I can use some new ones.
Chris, anything else before we kind of wrap it up?
No, I think that's it. We kind of covered all of the vehicles and playsets that I wanted to cover. So.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm going back and and talking to Star Wars. And you know, you're talking about me collecting anything with the Star Wars line, anything before Empire, just having those with the original because they're so old. And those were some of the very first things that we ever got our hands on. And, you know, you say you don't remember very much about Star Wars when it came out. I vividly remember sitting in a theater. I remember the day before having to beg my mom on the phone to let me go to see a PG rated movie. I don't remember much after it. My parents tell me that when I came home, I wouldn't shut up for days until until I got them to take us all back to go see it. And I still wouldn't shut up. He said, I just never stopped talking about Star Wars. And the toys, I don't remember a whole lot. I remember a few toys that I had when I was little, but to me, toys didn't seem to really exist until Star Wars came out. And those figures were just so freaking awesome when they came out. I mean, they were, to me, they were so detailed. They looked just like what I'd seen in the movie. And, you know, we've mentioned this before, the box art and getting to see the pictures of the movie on the box. That was the way we got to see the movie as a kid. And to see the action figures on the card and like, oh my God, there it is. He's in the movie. You know, we didn't have it like we do now where I've got it on my freaking phone when I'm sitting in the doctor's office. I can watch the movie while I'm waiting. You know, we didn't have that back then. That's how we saw Star Wars. Beg our parents to let us go see it again. And I had my mom many a times. No, I'm not taking you back to go see that again. Why not?
You know, and as far as collecting too, like, I have a lot of, you know, I have Gentle Giant. I have just some of the higher end collectibles, some of the higher end statues, the 12-inch stuff, the Sideshow stuff. But it does go back to those figures, or the figures and the vehicles that I got as a kid, you know, that Millennium Falcon that's, you know, decades old now, and the Snowspeeders and the Twin Car Pilots and stuff like that I still have that kind of have that special place in the house, or will have that special place in the house once I get a room. That's going to kind of be the feature of my collection is to still have that stuff as a kid. I think that's like some of the coolest things when you see in collections is like, hey, this is the original, man. This is from, I opened this up when I was a kid and for my birthday or for Christmas or whatever. That's kind of like the coolest thing. So,
You know, my nieces and nephews come over and they'll see something. And I said, man, that's older than you.
Yeah.
Way exactly. Older than you.
Yeah. And the kids, they don't get to touch any of that. No, it's kind of hanging on the wall or it's on a shelf. And just, they know, like, when their friends come over, they already know, like, hey, don't kind of go near it. You can look at it, but don't go near it. They already know, you know.
Exactly.
They tell their friends, you know, stay away.
Yep.
Stay away. So that's good. I got them trained.
They know their boundary.
Yeah. Chris 51, I mean, your shop, I mean, you got to have, I mean, do you tell people when they come in, it's like, hey, don't get too close to some of the stuff? I mean, how do you do that, you know?
Well, honestly, the stuff that's really, like, you know, the Sideshow stuff and that kind of stuff that's really valuable and the vintage stuff that's actually in my shop, I have that all behind where the tattoo artists are all sitting. So you have to go through us to get to it, which ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? The rest of the stuff in the front of the shop is mostly, you know, stuff that's more for sale. I'm a Sideshow dealer. I'm a Kid Robot dealer, stuff like that. So it is for sale, and I have a lot of art up there and stuff. But definitely keep the other stuff behind me where it's in my view at all times, you know, and everyone else is in my view at all times.
But most people respect that, don't they?
Oh, they do. It's more like a museum feel. Like, even the kids are very, very timid to go near and touch it. And they ask their parents, and their parents are like, no, don't touch that, you know? But it's very respectful. And I think since it's been seen on TV, it does have more of that museum feel now where people just want to come look at it all and check it out, you know? Which is really awesome. It's kind of like a geek museum tattoo shop.
I'm going to have to see, Matt, we're going to have to set up a trip to where we can both go out there and get some tattoos and then tour his home, too.
Yeah, I know. I love it. You know, I still haven't broken that ground yet, man.
You know, earlier you were talking about, when you were talking about the show and you were talking about getting basically the okay to show the toys, that actually surprises me because it's stuff that you own. You ought to be able to show it. What was the, can you explain anything on the reasoning behind they wouldn't let you show it without having approval?
Yeah. What it is basically for our situation, our scenario on reality television, it's kind of subdivided into three categories for each release. Okay. So there's apparel, which means we had to wear blank t-shirts and stuff at first until we got approval on apparel. And then there was decor, which of course is the background stuff. And then there was the tattoo art being approved. Now some companies, wouldn't approve anything. Marvel's like, screw you. We don't want you. Disney, screw you. Lego, no, we don't want kids looking at tattoos. You know, and then you had some companies that were really cool, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're like, do whatever the hell you want. You pay this amount, you can use our stuff however you want it, you know?
Wow.
And then there were some like, The Simpsons, which, you know, I use the old, hometown thing and this and that to really get involved with them. And they would approve decor and apparel, but not tattoos. And other people would approve tattoos, but not decor and apparel. So it was very tricky, and it was the biggest pain in the ass that we dealt with.
Nightmare.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And the cast, all we wanted to do, we're geeks. We just wanted to wear our Star Wars t-shirts and tattoo, you know, cool cartoons and shit all day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The fact that we had to get permission for every article of clothing. We did probably 50, 60 tattoos, and only half those made it because we couldn't get approval for the other ones, you know? We got around some stuff. You'll notice, like, you know, there's one that I did a quote-unquote Tyrannosaurus Rex, which had a lot of Jurassic Park influences in it, maybe.
Right,
and we
might
have been talking a lot about a certain dinosaur movie during it, but we couldn't call it a Jurassic Park tattoo because we did not get a release, so... There's fine lines, and then there's areas of gray, you know.
Yeah.
But the Star Wars thing, I think it's because it went into Disney's hands, and Disney itself, for you know the regular Disney animation, was so not supportive of tattoos, that maybe that was why it took longer to get the approval, and we still at the end never got really an official approval from Star Wars for tattooing. We did do some designs that we changed up a little bit, that we were able to get through, but we didn't get apparel. All we got was decor. That was all we got in the end. And so, like I said, we overloaded the shop of Star Wars once that happened. In fact, I remember the night we got it, my producer, cause I hounded him every single day. Do we get Star Wars yet? Do we get Star Trek? Do we get Terminator? Do we get something? Give me something, you know, Hanna-Barbera, give me something, dude. And, He texted me that night after filming at like 2 a.m, we got Star Wars, so you can bring in some stuff. Well, I went in at like 5 a.m, and I brought all my Star Wars stuff from the attic at the shop that was in boxes that I had to take down for filming, and put it all over the whole damn shop. I mean, it was a whole new shop. And the producers came in, and they were not happy. They're like, are you kidding me? Because you don't shoot consecutively, you know? You might shoot part of an episode, and then you have to go back in a couple weeks and wear the same outfit because they wanted to throw a different tattoo in there, or we didn't get, like I said, we didn't get approval for the tattoo in that episode, so we had to fill it and use something else, you know? So the background had to look, it had to be cohesive, and it had to look similar. And after a while, I think they were just like, fuck it. They gave up because I just kept adding more and more and more Star Wars stuff because I wasn't having it, man. So I think they gave up after all, but they were not happy at first.
I would think, what's the big deal? It's a tattoo shop. You move stuff around. But I would have been offended by the t-shirts. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's all I wear is Star Wars t-shirts. How am I supposed to dress to come in here?
It pissed us off, man. It was so hard to deal with, dude, I tell you.
Well, you know what doesn't make sense, too, is like you guys, as far as the Star Wars aspect of it, you guys, Josh was telling me this when he was on, that you guys are licensed to do Star Wars tattoos at, you know, at celebrations. So, you know, what's the big deal that you're putting it on TV? Didn't really make any sense. To you either, right?
Well, I think the whole reasoning behind it is because they think that the network, this network giant is going to profit from all of it. It's all run by advertisers, you know, that's
right,
how TV shows are run, all by advertisers. So they're thinking, the show gets bigger because we use popular Star Wars characters and this and that in it, and the show makes more money because of that. So in the end, they're going to want a piece of that action, you know.
Right.
So that's the whole point. The more you have something popular in there like Star Wars, the more money we're going to make, because the more fans you're going to get to watch it. So
yeah.
I see it from both sides. It's still frustrating as hell, but I can see it as a businessman. I can see it from Star Wars side, you know. But I would have gladly given them a percentage of whatever money we made to do it. I just don't think the network was willing to do that as easily as the cast was, you know.
See, that's where I think your biggest problem is. The network is paranoid. They didn't want to do anything without getting approval. That's
exactly
right there. They didn't want to get in trouble.
Right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a team of lawyers. I mean, literally a team of lawyers that do not want to take any unnecessary chances like that. And they don't, you know, and they're very thorough and they're very professional. And I don't blame them either, you know. And honestly, the network treated us like gold. I love those guys. And I understand. So it was still frustrating as hell going through it. But looking back on it, you know, you see their point of view. You know, now that season one is aired and people see that it's a show that has no derogatory statements toward geek culture. It's very popular in the fan base. There's no drama. There's no hatred and anything right. like that that's in other shows. Now people would be coming to us like, here, use this, promote our new movie coming out, do this, do that. So it's a lot harder because you have to prove yourself season one and no one knows who you are and how you're going to use their product. So that's what makes it so difficult.
True.
I had no idea, and it's kind of, that was kind of opening to hear all the stuff you had to go through just to make, you know, what was it, 12, 13 episodes for season one. It's like, wow, we just don't, you know, us that are just watching the show, we have no idea that you guys had to go through all that crap. I mean, we obviously, I kind of knew that there's lots of filming and lots of long days and stuff like that, but I had no idea about all the legal stuff that you had to go through to do that. Especially like you said, I mean, this is my shirt. I bought this shirt, or these are my toys in my shop. You're coming into, I mean, you just don't even think about stuff like that. Like you said, it's all about the money and the advertising and the network. So wow, that was actually eye opening there. So let me finish up with this, Chris 51. We're talking about tattoos, your tattoo shop and Star Wars and pop culture. Is there a favorite Star Wars tattoo that you did that to this day, it's like, this is my number one. Like, you have a portfolio, like, check this one out. I mean, is there one that stands out to you?
Yeah, there is. I'm not like Josh Bywell and Chris Jones, who literally do Star Wars tattoos every day of their life.
Okay.
I kind of have a niche in, I do a lot of Simpsons and cartoons and other illustrative, you know, turtles and stuff like that. So I don't get to do Star Wars as much as they do. So I'm just enamored when I do get to do it, you know. But I'd say the one that really sticks out for me is I did and I of course would do it differently today looking back on it because you progress as an artist, you know, and, but I did a totem pole, a wooden totem pole that had like R2 and Boba Fett and Darth Vader and stuff carved into the wood. And so instead of like, you know, faces that you'd see or, you know, an eagle, a bear, or what have you. It's the Star Wars characters in the totem pole, and it's got, you know, pretty flowers growing around it and stuff like that. And I did that on a girl in England at a convention, and I won Best in Show for that tattoo, and that was the epitome of my career. That gave me the confidence to being able to do something geeky that I love and turn it into a tattoo like that. You know, it gives you that motivation to turn that way in your career. And that was a defining moment for me.
Nice.
That made me feel like, you know what? I am going to focus on doing Star Wars and cartoon and geeky tattoos and stuff. And I'm going to do more with this because it's not being done really that much. And there's a spot for it here. And there's a lot of geek love out there that would want this, you know? So that was definitely a defining moment in my life. Not only as a Star Wars tattoo, but just as a, you know, elliptical tattoo in itself.
Right. Wow. Very cool. Of course, if anybody wants to know or see some of his work, Chris51.com, you can go there and check out everything. Merchandise Press, the studio, everything about Chris51 there. You can follow him on Twitter. I think it's what, at Chris51, Inc., right?
They're all some version of Chris51, the number, or 51 spelt out, whatever the social media allows or doesn't allow you to do.
Right.
Yeah, they're all Chris51 some way, some shape or form.
Yeah. And Chris, I know you're not, Chris51, you're not going to be tattooing, but Did you want to, before we take off, you want to mention anything, maybe where you're going to be or besides Celebration or anything coming up for you that you want to mention before we go?
Yeah, if you don't mind, that's great. Thanks. I'll make it quick, guys. Thanks for the time. Yeah, at Celebration, definitely please come check me out. I will be signing The Force in the Flesh, new tattoo Star Wars book that Shane Turgeon is putting out. It's an amazing book, whether you're a tattoo collector or an art collector. So come see me at his booth and pick up that book. And I will be at I'll be spending a lot of time at the Acme Art Studios booth, which has Steve Anderson and Brian Rood and a bunch of Chris Travass, a bunch of great Star Wars artists there that blow your mind. I don't know how these guys do it. So I'm telling them, you know, I'm good friends with these guys, and I'm telling them, oh, I'm gonna come hang out, and they're all like, oh, this TV guy's gonna come hang out, and here I'm the one who's a little intimidated because these guys are such good artists. So I'm gonna go there and I'm gonna spy on their asses and learn how they do what they do, you know. And I just hope I can draw a little with them and pick their brains a little bit. So I'll be hanging out there a lot as well. Cool. And the coolest thing is after Star Wars Celebration, I do a tour called Geekster Inc. Legends at Wizard Worlds, and I travel around and I do all the Wizard World Comic Cons, and there we all tattoo and I hold panels and all that stuff. But it's the next week in Vegas after the Star Wars convention. In between, my wife and I, after Star Wars, are headed to Vegas, and we're getting married. Well, my fiance and I, we're getting married, and we're having a Star Wars themed wedding, and Darth Vader is actually marrying us.
Awesome. So
now, you know, that is exactly the reasons like that is why I'm marrying this woman. She's unbelievably amazing, supports all of my geekiness. And even though she's not into it as much as me, she knows how much it means to me. So the fact that she said we could do a Star Wars wedding, I'm even going to put on a Star Wars tie, and Darth Vader's going to have the helmet on and the whole nine yards. And,
nice.
You know, yeah, so I'm really excited. So it's going to be the greatest couple weeks of my life, I tell you.
Can't wait to see pictures of that online.
Oh, yeah, they'll be all over, man. All kinds of Star Wars wedding pictures for sure.
Oh, you definitely got to put that on there. Man, that's cool. Very cool, very cool. Well, cool, man. Thanks again, man, for coming on and taking some time with us. I really appreciate that. Chris.
Yes.
I think our next show will be fairly quick because we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about after Celebration. So for those listening, stay tuned. Maybe a week or two after Celebration, we'll get back together and talk about all the news that's come out from there. But before we go, Chris, you want to mention what we got going on or our Facebook stuff and where to find us?
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook at Starlight Pit Podcast or at Classic Star Wars on Facebook, and of course Twitter at Classic Star Wars is the same thing. And email address, we've got a new email address at classicstarwars1977@gmail.com. That's the one we get to. And you can also go to SarlaccPitPodcast.com. You can go there to listen to any of the episodes. You can download them from there, or you can also leave us a voice message, which actually I need to check. I hadn't checked it lately, so. If you have left a message, okay. If you left a message before the show, I'm sorry. We missed it, but we'll get it on the next one.
yeah, big show next time. Well, that's good, man. That's great. Again, like I said, thanks to Chris for coming on. Chris, we do want for coming on, taking some time. Now, we thank you guys for listening and making us part of your Star Wars day. So for Chris and Chris 51, my name is Matt. We will see you guys next time in the Sarlacc Pit.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you for joining us on the Sarlacc Pit, the official podcast of GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com. Star Wars, its logo, and all things in the Star Wars universe are the property of Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. All original content within this podcast, unless otherwise indicated, is the intellectual property of GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com.